It is U.S. Open week, and it's your time zone week as well. How about that? Look at that. The West Coast prime
time. Yeah, it's actually
time.
Behind me in terms of the sunset. I think it's going to end like after dinner for a change.
Which
it's funny
is
because
odd.
when the tour is on the West Coast, you know, in January and early February, it's not enough daylight, so it's ending at like 5 local time, which is kind of early. But when you get spoiled with 3 o'clock finishes local time for the next 3 months, who's complaining, right? So it's going to end a little bit later. You know, two tea times on Sunday might not be till like 2:30. We'll see what happens, see what they do with it.
Oh, you just feel like you're...
Longest days of the year now.
Well, that's exactly
right. Longest
daylight
hours, rather.
And you'll just feel like you were living in the Midwest again. Beat the Pirates tonight, will you? The Reds are hot. Look out, look out, look out for those Reds. Young prospects coming up. Look out, look
you
out.
You paused when you said the Cubs are beneath. I'm like, there's no wrong answer then. Whatever you're going to say after that. Next topic.
Well, the Cubs.
Oh, it's been rough.
It has been.
Rough.
A little rebuilding, a little of this. Oh, the division stinks, and that's our running joke here. It's the Reds just don't stink more than everybody else, just stink less. So they're bringing up kids.
Sounds like Twitter. That sounds like my Twitter timeline. Regarding my own writing. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you're here. We only do major championships with you. You are the Brooks Koepka of this program. You only care 4 weeks of the year with me, and that's fine. I don't blame you. Los Angeles Country Club, the North Course. No one has seen it except some of our friends in the Pac-12. Max Homa, as it's been demonstrated all week long. L.A. man, Burbank, from Burbank, course record holder. Let's talk course before we start golfers, as we always do, to get people kind of excited about what's going on. And I have a couple thoughts, and I'll pitch it to you. Number one, it's another Gil Hance. It seems like every course we are playing major championship golf these days has Gil Hance's fingerprints on it. The other interesting part is it is the first time since 2005 we will see Bermuda Rough involved in a U.S. Open. That was at Pinehurst number 2, and Gil Hance redid Pinehurst number 2 and stripped it of all its trees and rough for 2014, where Martin Keimer blew the doors off the place. It is a style that is perhaps not the quintessential U.S. Open style of golf, but everything I've seen, it looks like it's going to be a wonderful challenge, similar to Riviera, but it's not Riviera either. George C. Thomas, our designer, and Gil Hance, the redoer. The course has to be part of the story. That's part of the USGA's deal. The players get to play it. Your thoughts on the North Course at the LA Country Club?
So, the first thing, yes, I do only the majors with you, but I do all of the tournaments that you pay me for. So, don't forget that.
Good point.
That's truth, everybody. If Gil Hance ever wanted to get like into the how to be a salesperson, how to be a course architect, and how to be a genius at time management, I'd probably sign up and take all of them because I don't know how he's able to do everything he's able to do and still maintain a balance outside of the job. A phenomenal person. You know, he went to school at the University of Denver for political science and history, which is exactly what Cooper's at the University of Utah for right now. And I keep wondering, when is that course architecture going to click in for Cooper? I don't think that's going to be his trajectory, but keep your options open, everybody. Stay in school and explore. That's what life's all about. And Gil Hance is just a fascinating creature. Just Gil Hance, just the man. But in terms of the creation, the collaboration with Jim Wagner and Jeff Shackelford at LECC, when I was writing the power rankings and I got done, I'm like, man, that's a lot of words. And I still felt like I could have written another 300, not that everybody would have read them, but like, I just feel like if I'm going to use modern terminology, it's going to complete the bingo card, you know? I mean, you got every yardage, you got every club in the bag, the sixth hole, you know.
It's all true, that's why.
Bodenheimer said that it's, you know, the best way to play it is backwards, so you tee off, get it down there, and then come in from the opposite angle. I just, it's kind of like a video game, but then it's just so beautiful with the imagery. I don't know how long it's been since I've thought like of a quintessential U.S. Open course. Like you had said, they've really tried to tweak some things a lot over the years, and then every once in a while they'll go back to that classic, and this just isn't that. And the Bermuda Rough is more of an anomaly or a fact than it is over the friction of it. I mean, there's going to be courses in the future where this is going to happen, but these guys are not unfamiliar with it. It's not like it's the fescue of of Chambers Bay, you know, and all that sort of thing. We're not expecting a sideways event like that. So, and it'll present, you know, it'll reveal the best golfer like that always does. And that really is sort of the classic narrative that we will have this week.
And that is the point. The course is the star of the show. It is ready to go, and the 156 attacking it. Well, it's always interesting in the U.S. Open. We talk at the PGA Championship. It's all professional players, 156 of them, and you get 20 club pros and the senior PGA champion as well. But this week, well, it's open for everybody. If you had a handicap of plus 1.4 or better, you could qualify to get in. 19 local qualifiers. Some of those are the amateurs, 19 amateurs as well. You've got great stories. It's the American dream. You can talk about all that. But tomorrow when the ball's in the air, buddy, we're going to shift to the power rankings.
Look, this is why these guys prepare for these four events, just like I do for you four times a year. I mean, and that's why the Michael Block story at the PGA was so compelling. I mean, he's playing well, but the fact that all of the other guys in the field, all the household names, are doing the same thing. And he beat so many of them. There was a lot to digest there in a short period of time. Michael Block, not in the U.S. Open, by the way, did not qualify. But, yes, it's the same sort of story if we see an amateur just make the cut, and then who knows what happens on the weekend, or a qualifier somehow snake through just to get paid. Just that alone in this tournament is an incredible headline that will have a life to it for a period of time. So, then we get to the power rankings. We get to the household names that we expect to contend. And I mean, Scottie Scheffler's at the top. He's the board favorite. Can't win every week, but doggone it, if he could play in a scramble and you just give the putter to somebody else, then he would. You know.
Well, that's interesting. And we'll start with Scheff because he's playing so well. It's almost unbelievable that the putter just isn't working because everything else is one, 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 first, second, second, first. And with that skill level, you just figure at some point he'd trip and fall over and all of a sudden it'd start working again. Well, that hasn't been the case. And that's the fascinating part. We're talking about him like he hasn't won. Well, he's already won a handful of times. He just hasn't won in the last 2 or 3 months.
First time I saw him struggle, or at least, I don't know, play below expectations with the putter, was in the final of the match play 2 years ago to Billy Horschel. And it was on Sunday, and no one was sinking anything. It was a war of attrition, and Horschel basically was the best of the losers, even though he obviously won the thing. It was a long week and all of that. I get that. But Scheffler just wasn't pouring in the mid-range stuff that you'd expect from a guy of that caliber. Granted, he hadn't won yet and all that. He didn't experience all those things that he started to experience a year ago plus. So that's been in my head since. So I'm not there's part of me that's not surprised that he's struggling, but man, this much, it is wild. The second thing is, I just can't get away from the fact of just how balanced he is as a person and how much that matters and how, you know, we can't quantify that, but, you know, if you lived long enough, if you've experienced enough where you have a soul that's been hit down a couple times, and you have to get back up and dust yourself off, you kind of understand and appreciate the fact that he's able to just go out and fail, and he's okay with it, and he goes out and does it again, and he's okay with it, and then every once in a while he picks off a victory. You know, top threes and top fives aren't bad either, but, you know, there's only one winner, and these guys think a different way than you and I do, or at least I do, and it's just so impressive because it matters, you know. I mean, think of Webb Simpson. These guys that they're God-fearing. I think that matters. We see a lot of this on the PGA Tour over the years, and man, again, we can't quantify it, but I really lean into that as a confidence builder. Just having the balance that you need in a sport that wants to tear you apart, and you're exposed. And he's just the best at not getting caught up in any of that. So if you can have like strokes gained armor, then he's also leading the tour on that.
Does he remind you of kind of Dustin Johnson back in the old days where he just played great all the time and it seems like nothing bothered him or nothing registered or nothing, you know, that didn't set the alarm off? It's just like, yeah, I'm playing golf. This is great. He kind of has that feel to it.
Yeah, totally. Different reasons.
Yeah.
Wired dudes. Dustin was the guy where the water just rolled off the back, just keeps going. You know, I mean, I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to be fine, and everybody's behind me because I don't have to see them, and really be able to simplify it. you know, and obviously being incredibly talented doesn't hurt. But Jeff was more engaging, right? He gives us a little bit more of a peek. He's more relatable.
He's down homier.
Parts of him that feel like he's more fully formed than DJ was when he was coming up.
No, I agree with that because I think Scheffler's got the aw shucks, you know, kid down the street or whatever. You know, me and my best girl and all, you know, all the things that go along with that. He feels very, very Rockwellian, if you will, in the golfing
world. Yeah, but it's not like he's like overdoing it either. He's
it's natural. Right. I agree 100%. It's just different.
Come across as all right. Enough of that already. Kind of like Michael Block. People getting fatigued a little bit. Enough of that. Well, and that was a very, very short period of time. And Michael Block
burn hot, baby. Burn hot.
Scene. Say again?
Burn hot, baby. Burn hot. You got that 15 minutes. Ride that way. Well, Bubba's one of them, too. Bubba, oh, we love Bubba. Yeah. He does this. Then all of a sudden, you hear all the stories. You just don't hear those stories about Scheffler. So I give him a little bit of credit.
Like,
there.
If you have that quality and you're really good at golf or another profession where you're paid really well for that specific skill, it's probably going to play well for a long period of time. So you just need some of these things to come together. And he obviously has experience in winning now. So that's why he comes across as unbeatable to me.
I agree with you. And just looking at the numbers of strokes gained tee to green or approach to green or off the tee, it's just like, well, I got to take my shoes off to count that high. What's going on here? He's just a machine, and it is a little bit robotic in a good sense, but when he gets that putter in his hands, my goodness, we all hold our breath and see what we're going to happen. But the U.S. Open, as we know and as most of our golf fans know, it's never a putting contest, but putting is a part of it. The U.S. Open does not give you a club in your bag. You can just say, oh, I don't have to worry about that this week. How well does he have to putt to pay off his, what, 6-1, 6.5-1, 7-1, whatever he is now?
So what was the number at Muirfield Village? 40% or something better than what he putted, he would have won. And even he acknowledged if he would have just found the hole, he would have taken away the trophy. And that's not something that kind of rhetoric from him is familiar to us. So just the confidence, I mean, he knows what he's doing. A little bit of work here, a little bit of work there. And, it didn't really play out last week at Oakdale in terms of the retroactive analysis based on the top of the leaderboard. But in general, ball strikers tend to play better on courses where the greens are unfamiliar. There's a learning curve on the greens, whereas you can still hit full shots at your targets anywhere. And so that's why another reason why I think Scheffler should get off to, as long as he gets off to a good start, he could really run away and hide, depending on what Brooks Koepka does, of course. We just saw that. But with stimp meter readings of 13, these are bent grass greens and they're unfamiliar and all the targets look different. There's really nothing normal or I should say, what's the word? Like it's not familiar from green to green. It's like 18 different courses, but one at a time, which is just so compelling. It's going to require the full game, and obviously putting is part of that. But I think average, being an average putter or even a little bit below average this week, again, Scheffler we're talking about can get away with it. But obviously there are others that can do that same thing. Victor Hovland at number 4 in the power rankings, coming off the victory at Memorial, where his short game is improving. Again, a guy who laces a tee to green like so many of these guys can get away with an average putting week in a week like this.
And we'll talk about more of those on your power rankings. Some guys, maybe we'll look the other direction. I don't want to use the word fade, but some guys just aren't playing well enough that they don't deserve your full examination perhaps this week. And we're 20 deep in the power rankings this week. We'll get to some sleepers, guys to fade away. You know, just like that, 14, 15 minutes gone. We've got to take a quick timeout. We'll get to Diane's news headlines. More with the Oracle from PGAtour.com. That is Rob Bolton. At Rob Bolton Golf, the power rankings, sleepers, everything else, find it at PGAtour.com and GolfBet. Welcome back to Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Well, it's always happy when Rob Bolton from PGA Tour is here. That means we've got a big golf tournament for you. The U.S. Open 123rd edition is at the L.A. Country Club this weekend. In two weekends at Sultan's Run in Jasper is the 2023 Senior LPGA Championship. I will be giving away tickets all day tomorrow and Friday for the 29th, 30th, and the 1st. If you'd like to see the LPGA Senior Junior Championship. Salt and Run is a great course, great hospitality, beautiful rolling hills, and you get to see some big-time golf as well. Kari Webb is going to be there. I don't have the lineup in front of me. I should know more than one person, but that's my fault. I'm too busy in the U.S. Open this week. So put that on your list for things to do tomorrow. Get tickets from me. We'll have them for Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Heck, if you want to go all 3 days, I'll hook you up with that as well. Thanks to our friends at Salton's Run for being on board today. Let's do 15 more good minutes with my great friend Rob Bolton from PGAtour.com. Checking in from the Valley of the Sun. Not much sun in Los Angeles today. A little June gloom. And before we get too deep into the power rankings, the Jay Monahan story, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, that broke about 9 o'clock last night. That just can we have a normal week of just golf without all the rest of the news?
No.
Good point.
Really not.
Good point.
Thoughts are with Jay and his family. I have no idea what's happening. I've asked some additional questions. Essentially, what the public knows is what staff knows. So,
been a couple weeks, huh?
Retaining the privacy that he deserves. So, here we are. There's a lot of uncertainty, but it's the U.S. Open, so the USGA is running this event. I know Jay had plans of being in Connecticut next week for the Travelers. That seems unlikely now, but I haven't heard if he's not going to be there. But he said last week at Oakdale that he had planned on being at TPC River Highlands, so we'll see. But certainly unsettling, and I don't know, man. It's like I asked a question about worst case, and that was quickly brushed off. But I don't know anything either. And
let's talk about things you know about golfers.
Yeah.
Listing golfers, favorites, betting favorites, angles, all the fun stuff this week. We know that's why everybody tunes in. We'll get to the sleepers. We'll get to the guys. We're probably going to fade away. But I know everybody wants to talk about the California connections. But before we do that, let's get into Brooks Koepka. We talked before the PGA started. You and I did not have a ton of, hey, this is definitely the guy. In my one-and-done game, one-third of the players, half the players took Koepka that week. Well, we all look like geniuses. But he's flat out told you it's 4 weeks a year he pays attention to, and this qualifies as one of them.
Yeah, it's so funny. My personal reaction to the guy is that as a sports fan, I love what he is as an athlete and how he's able to compartmentalize the focus, just the fearlessness. The fact that he knows what kind of aura that he's exuding, and it's a lot, it's Tiger-like. I mean, let's just face it. Anybody who's old enough to remember when Tiger was walking around and beating everybody regularly, Koepka has sort of, he's embraced that. It's all over again in a different body that was no doubt inspired by Tiger. So here we have the manifestation of what a lot of people were talking about 20, 25 years ago, what would happen if it all comes together. And so Koepka checks all of those boxes. He's healthy. He's in a right place mentally. And I think the wildest thing I heard said about him winning the PGA and then after last week's news was that Brooks Koepka has won everything. And if that's not inaccurate, and he believes it, then I have the wrong person at number one in the power rankings. It should be Koepka, not Scheffler.
I agree with you. And this event always gets his attention. Winner, back-to-back, 2017 Erin Hills, new course, nobody saw. Shinnecock, classic U.S. Open course, won that one. Second at the next year, trying to go three in a row, he was second to Gary Woodland, albeit by three shots. He doesn't miss.
Burn through all 15 of our minutes here, pal.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, and Koepka deserves it. I think that's the greater point, because when we look at John Rahm, no one loves the West Coast more than Rahm does. We know he got engaged at Torrey Pines. He probably got married at Torrey Pines. He visits Torrey Pines. Well, he also won at Riviera, and that's another George C. Thomas course. And Rahm, 4 victories this season, hasn't hit it great the last couple of times we've seen him, but there's no way you can dismiss him either.
aware of the California narrative. Maybe a step back and let everybody else sort of run with it, just because I really do prefer the golfer-centric approach in my chair. I do lean into it with certain things, like where a certain country seems to be better at a skill than others, like Aussies around the greens, Swedes with the putter, that sort of thing. And even then, there are exceptions, or there always will be. With Rahm and Torrey Pines, that's just a special connection. No one else has that, and it happens to be in California. He wins at Riviera. Yes, it's a better connection that you've made, in my opinion, to this week. And he's also happens to be John Rahm, who won the Masters, and he's in an incredible place in his career and thriving as a result of it. So he's a perfect number three for the power rankings, and the course happens to be in California. It happens to be, they share the same designer with George Thomas. I get all that, but it's just a different track. It's unique, right? So he's going to have to learn it just like anyone else. And so the preparation, everything else that goes into it, and then you look at the talent.
Well, there's plenty of it. Yeah, bags and bags of talent. Shoffley, Cantlay, we can't separate them. No one has separated themselves in this group, except Shoffley plays the majors, and especially the U.S. Open, better than Cantlay, but Cantlay is the UCLA guy, used to live in Long Beach, plays pretty well. He's starting to find his feet in the major championships, but I think when I look back, 2016 Dustin Johnson forward, all the U.S. Open champions are first-time major winners, minus Koepka going back-to-back. Well, either one of those two would fit that bill this week.
I think if I was at a tournament or a major, especially with either of those guys up at the dais, my only question would be, what is the bet that the two of you have who's going to win the major the first?
And what is on the line? What's on the line?
Yeah. Payoff. Because as much as these guys can ebb and flow on a week to week or over time in the season, because we know they're good friends, they're forever linked. They're inseparable until the first guy wins a major, and that's got to happen. It's going to happen, right? And they can't win it the same week. So who's going to be that guy? And I want to know what's on the line. So yeah, in a sense, they're kind of the same player from that perspective, but Schauffele, his record in the U.S. Open is phenomenal. Cantlay, he's been pretty good in the majors. Not awesome yet. We still remember that he's still learning a lot. Even though he's done so much in the last few years, I don't know. I still feel like his learning curve is a little bit slower. There's something about the way he goes about things methodically, and yet he's still a great quote, and he's open, and he's really thoughtful. And he's got closed off so much as well, too, so he's a really compelling character. So 6 and 8, Cantlay, Schauffele in the power rankings. A lot of links this week, but watch, they'll go out and tie, like, T5 or something. Neither of them will win.
Well, and Schauffele's worst outing at the U.S. Open was last year. First time outside of the top 7 in 6 visits.
Yeah.
T14. Oh, geez. Yeah, better get another job. Better find something else to do. Let's see. The last 3 U.S. Open winners have all been 6 under par. The last 3 U.S. Open winners have been 26 or 27. Well, that knocks out 25-year-old Victor Hovland, and he's got some history going against him as well. Not many guys win their last event and go on to win a major championship. That doesn't happen very often, but Hovland has been great. His last, 4 majors or 3 majors are all in the top 10. He's starting to evolve. He's starting to figure out, you finally won a golf tournament in the continental United States. Good for him.
With that data, with the ages and the scores, it sounds like you're accusing the USGA of profiling. This is what it sounds like to me, man.
1.4 plus 1.4 handicaps and up. Yes, that is the profile.
I love Victor Hovland this week. And the victory for Victor at Memorial. There is a contentment about him now. He's no longer looks like he's that little bit of deer in headlights that he has presented. He finally got his victory on U.S. soil, mainland, and an incredible field at that. He's really elevated now to a place. And obviously, he's won the Hero World Challenge over a couple, a great field there, albeit small. 2 years in a row and abroad, and like he knows he's good, but to do it at Jack's house and this soon, or this, you know, just 2 weeks out from the U.S. Open, and there's, it's just a maturity about him we're watching ahead of our, you know, in front of us. We saw John Rahm go through this a little bit. John Rahm, a little more, you know, emotional, certainly inside the ropes, and was candid about trying to maintain that. Whereas Victor has presented himself as more of like, you know, he's been at the kiddie table for a while. Now he's no longer there. And now he deserves to be sitting at the big table with the rest of us. And he's proven that. So, and the game, obviously, is in incredible form. But most of all, he believes in a short game around the greens. He believes in it. Forget the data. He believes in it. There's a confidence there. And so when he's faced with something that's maybe not the greatest lie, he doesn't have that doubt. He hasn't lost any confidence. In fact, he's gained it in spades.
I can't believe we're 26 minutes into a conversation about the U.S. Open and we have not brought up Rory McIlroy's name just yet. Well, here we are. He did not
It's your show.
Yeah, right. You get your own show. That's exactly. If you don't like it, get your own show. That's right. But McIlroy did not do media this week after putting himself out last week to be the face of perhaps the players and what's been going on, and that had to be some kind of emotional drain. It didn't appear that way on the golf course. Now, I'm not in the locker room with them either, but three straight top tens, that's the good news. Four straight top tens at the U.S. Open. We know he's the all-time leading scorer here, the record setter back at Congressional in 2011. Has he cleared the flight deck, and is he ready for takeoff?
Yes.
There you go. It's that easy, right?
So I watched his presser last week in real time, and then heard him talk about how uncomfortable he was, and then watched it again. I never go watch another one. I mean, why would you do that? And I didn't pick up on anything that was excessively awkward about it. So he was feeling something that he wasn't presenting on the outside, the exterior, right? I've been such a fan and I suppose at times apologist, even though that's been unintentional, just because I've expected him to play really well because he's Rory McIlroy, but also just how he's proven beginning at last year's Canadian Open about the statement victory and matching Greg Norman, or one more than Greg Norman, that type of thing, and with total victories, and now he's obviously extended. But it's like he's been able to handle it all, and then just recently, a couple months ago, he says it's been a lot, it's been too much, and now he's scaling back into becoming a professional golfer all over again. And hey, look, it's paying off. He remembered. Good for us, good for him. It's the final round that we need to kind of be concerned about. Remember, it wasn't that long ago, it was the first round we had to be worried about.
Right.
So putting four rounds together isn't easy for anybody, but when you're Rory McIlroy and everything you do is overanalyzed because you're Rory McIlroy, then we're going to probably pay more attention to it than we need to. So we have to take a step back and realize, look, he's not a robot, but he's starting to play like one again, and that's good. That's a good thing. So yeah, man, I mean, expectations are very high once again.
They should be. That's exactly right. Rob Bolton's our guest. You should recognize that voice as he joins us on Majors Eve, Wednesday. Here we go. We got to hurry up and get this out there for the masses. We'll get to Fitzpatrick in a minute, but the local story this year angle would be Max Homa, the Burbank native, course record holder, plays really well at George C. Thomas's Riviera. I know you don't love perhaps that entire angle, but Rom beat him back in February. Homa has won it before. He loves Los Angeles. He loves this. This is his dream. This is right in front of him. I can't just dismiss that like Fitzpatrick winning where he won the amateur last year, can I?
No. No. Look, I don't hate the angle about Riviera. I just think as long as the guys believe in it, that's all that matters. We just can't really point to it, you know, analytically and obviously what we do for a living. For prognosticating, it can be kind of a tired narrative that doesn't have any support, and you kind of trust that the reader's going to understand and the bettor's going to go forward with it. You know, and I try not to put too much credence into all of that. If the guys are comfortable on either, then that's all that really matters, but we still need to understand the details of it as it concerns a guy like Max Homa, who has been targeting this event on this course for years. This has been his destination in a lot of different ways, and I think the timing is absolutely perfect for him to rise up and actually have a top 10 in a major for the first time, which is crazy that he hasn't. But, again, he's still on the rise a little bit as well. I tend to value him a lot higher than others, but this week it's the week that he should deliver on it. The perspective, the fact that he's of a certain age now, he's been around the block, he understands what it's taken. There are no negatives. And the fact that this guy, this week, he wants it so badly might be the only negative, and that's not such a bad thing either. We've seen him prevail in this situation before. So there would be nothing unprecedented about it this week other than a top 10 and, of course, a victory in a major.
The interesting part of his comments, and I know you saw them, was, hey, look, I'm winning golf tournaments on major championship venues against very big fields. It's just not the week of the major. So he's accepted. Right. He needs to figure it out and play better on these weeks that count just a little bit more. But, again, admitting your quote-unquote problem might be the first step to recovery. So we'll keep an eye on Max Homa. Course record, again, 61 in the Pac-12 championships. Back in 2013, Jeff Shackelford told us earlier this week, if you were listening to that, that's fine, but it is different. Nothing is ever the same, but it is a point of reference that not every player has teeing it up this week. We'll stop with the favorites because I want everybody to go to PGAtour.com and read the power rankings. They're right there front and center. You can't miss them. I'm intrigued by Jordan Spieth this week. I poo-pooed him. Colonial, I thought that was going to be the week, and then it's the wrist deal, and there's not a wrist deal. Then you're T5 at Memorial, which was gnarly, rough, and impossible, and what are you doing there? That's the week I thought you'd do this. And well, I mean, surely with this goofy course and creativity abounding everywhere, he likes Australian courses. He likes everything. But here's a shot maker's course. Here's creativity. Here's thinking through it. He jumps higher on my list than maybe I thought he would be 2 weeks ago.
Because he's Jordan Spieth, again, just like with all these other guys we discussed, everything they do is going to be overanalyzed and scrutinized and covered. And we see so many guys every week with tape on their wrists that we don't know what's going on because no one cares, essentially. I mean, bettors and fantasy gamers care, but there's not enough people, as you and I know, being able to have the time to go talk to these guys about what's going on.
You remember when Diane Donald yelled at me? Didn't yell at me. When I asked her about that at the Masters in 2011. You remember that?
Yeah. Hey, it matters.
Well,
he's
got tape on his wrist. Luke Donald, hey, is everything okay? She's like, yeah, it's great. What are you talking to me for? It's like, well, yes. I tried. That was my foyer into investigative reporting, and then I'm now retired from that angle.
Never invited back to the Masters.
No, not at all. That's interestingly enough.
Yeah. So I think, but the point of me referencing that is that Spieth has actually been playing well since. It's just like, he's been asked about it, so he's certainly going to answer the question. If he didn't answer the question, it would raise even more suspicion, but he went out and played well. So it can be a much ado about nothing, much like it is for the other guys that we never hear about. So it's just a good reminder not to put too much into it, even though we still have to be careful about it and cite it. I'm in on him this week. The fairways are generous. That's what he needs. The creativity you mentioned, just being engaged with a course like this should matter. So, yeah, I mean, this has all the makings for a Jordan Spieth run on Sunday.
Let's make some dads rich. Should we, shall we, on Father's Day weekend? I know your sleepers cover multiple nationalities. That doesn't matter. They're all evaluated in their own way, shape, and form. Who do we need to throw a couple bucks on to sneak into the top 10, top 20, top 40 that are on your radar this week?
I love the angle with Adam Hadwin getting taken down. And, like, Adam Hadwin's wife on Twitter.
Oh, to die for.
The tweet of the week, you know, that in classic Canadian fashion, Adam apologized for being tackled. That made my day during a time when, you know, none of us have had our days made quite the same lately. And that he's fine. The video, he got right up. The security guard put his arm around him. Adam did the same. Like, he's fine. And so you're getting plus value for top 40 in a guy who finished T12 in the U.S. Open last year. His three top 40s on five paydays in this tournament over time. So plus value, plus 160 at BetMGM last night when I looked at it. I don't know what it is right now, but it's still plus value, I have to imagine, for Adam Hadwin at this tournament. So throw maybe an extra shekel in there. and get yourself an even nicer tie on Sunday. Everybody.
Yeah, get Dad a ticket. He'll love you forever, especially if it cashes. Who else are we looking? Give me one more sleeper. I want people to go again to PGAtour.com. Golf bet to read all this from Rob Bolton. Who would be your other? You got to have a deeper one than that, because we love the long shot, don't we? We love the who's the next Michael Block, perhaps. Somebody from that affinity.
So I'm going to actually pivot from the sleepers, because those are there, and I'm going to go to the Golf Bet Insider, and I went with only three top 40s in my tap-ins this week. A couple of them are more common than the others, but I'm going with Sam Bennett, the reigning U.S. Open champion, who's recently turned professional. He's plus 300, so 3-1 for a top 40.
Ooh.
He already had a top 20 in the Masters. Granted, it's going to be a little easier to finish well in that event, but he was still a debutante, which is not easy at that tournament. He's played again since he made the cut, and he's back this week. Plus 300 for top 40 for that guy. I mean, look, he's a PGA Tour University graduate. He's going to be able to have unlimited sponsor exemptions for the remainder of this season. The on-ramp to the PGA Tour is nice and wide, just like the fairways this week. And his confidence is up there. Everything, he's just in the best place he needs to be. And for me, a little bit like Will Zalatoris en route to his Rookie of the Year season a couple years ago, pal, when these guys are in this stage of their career, they have nothing to lose and everything to gain. There's nothing on the line. There are no stakes. Sam Bennett, with all the freedom and care and now money in the bank on going forward, he can just go do what he does best. So that he's 3-1 for a top 40 it's like BetMGM's giving the money away.
Top 60 in ties, right. That's not asking much. That's asking to get on the weekend and having won.
Yep.
One decent round. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. I'll be in touch, as always. Put me down for those long summer days at Royal Liverpool. You and I are going over, right? Hopping on the company jet? We'll be over in...
Well, I was kind of hoping we get over the Crazy Horse Tavern for one of these.
Well, we'll stop there and refuel.
I'm going to have to, clear out my entire schedule for it, but it's worth it, it sounds like.
Well, come on by and
see.
One of these decades. I'll come see you in the winter. You come see me in the summer. Thanks, buddy.
Deal. All right, pal.
That's the great Rob Bolton.